This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Kentucky Downs.
Exaggerator down to the 16th pole. The Gutty Nyquist is coming out of its second. And then Stradivari followed by Cherry Wine. But Exaggerator has turned the tables. He has won the Preakness Stakes.
It's Gone Runner. Gone Runner with Laurent Giroux. Clear to the finish in the Louisiana Derby. Gone Runner wins Going Away.
Also sponsored by Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, FarmPaint.com, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainesway, Gulfstream Park, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, Kirkwood Stables, Lane's End, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, the New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Sunrise Stallions, Tony's of Lexington, the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program, Washington Hay, and Woodbine Entertainment.
And Mar Spirit is progressing very nicely under Gary Stevens as he takes care of business with plenty left in the tank.
Destin and Creator, these two come down to the line together. Too close to goal. It was Creator and Destin right on the wire.
Now here's Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, coming to you, as always, throughout North America on Sirius XM Channel 93, on our terrestrial affiliates across the country, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Baron of the Backstretch, along with the legendary Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, Pope Jude as they call him, as well as former jockey, now racehorse owner, Jeff Bloom, sitting in with us this morning as we continue to make more history on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We wish you a happy 4th of July weekend from Canada. How about that one? Our very first broadcast from Woodbine Racetrack in Ontario and our second hosted from an international venue. JT, let me tell you, my friend, this has already been an incredible trip. We arrived on Thursday, and this has been a lot of fun, eh?
Yeah, it certainly has. We had Canada Day yesterday, which was very exciting to be in Canada on Canada Day, and we're going to have 4th of July in Canada right before we leave to go back to Lexington. But just a great time here. They have rolled out the red carpet for us at Woodbine, and if you ever have a chance to come up here, you have got to take the opportunity. It's a beautiful venue. The staff here is second to none. And everybody's been very friendly and welcoming to the HRN crew here in Canada.
You talk about an about face. This is typically a weekend for the past 7 or 8 years that we have been in South Florida to broadcast the Summit of Speed. However, we were afforded the opportunity to come to Woodbine this year to broadcast the Queen's Plate, which you're going to hear tomorrow, by the way, 4 to 6 Eastern time. That's the Canadian version of the Kentucky Derby, and we couldn't pass it up. So we go from South Florida, north of the border, to Ontario, Canada, and we are not regretting it one bit.
Well, no, you know, we once did the Summit of Speed at Calder in a stall in the paddock, and I had to wring my shirt out at the end of the broadcast because it was so hot. And here, you know, our colleague Jeff Bloom is sporting a jacket. Now, granted, you know, there's not a lot of meat on his bones, but it's a nice, crisp morning here in Canada, in Toronto, and the horses are out on the main track training. They just had the break, and everybody's coming out now. It's really a lot of fun. Here's a couple of breezers coming down the lane even as we speak, but beautiful, beautiful day here.
Yeah, and let's paint the picture for just a minute. We are positioned on the apron right next to the winner's circle, just in front of the finish line. Jeff, you commented yesterday there are three separate finish lines here at Woodbine, and the turf course, unlike what we see in America, is on the outside of the inner dirt course, which here is a Tapeta artificial surface. It's a mile and a half turf course, and then you have the 1 mile Tapeta main track in the middle of that, and then to the inside, the reason for the third finish line is the harness track. It's so unique.
Well, it's a spectacular facility, but first off, I have this jacket on because, as you know what they say in Canada, there's igloos and stuff like that, and I didn't want to be unprepared. But the weather's actually picture perfect, and I even had to turn my air conditioner on last night. But this facility is just really a wonderful facility for the horsemen. We talk about the exceptional hospitality and the friendliness of the staff, which is off the charts. But if you're a horseman involved in horse racing, this is a racetrack you want to bring your horses to. As you mentioned, we have this fantastic 1.5 mile European style turf course that is in picture perfect shape. A newly installed Tepeda surface for the main track that they run on, and the backstretch is just sprawling. They've got additional places to train their horses. They've got sandy gallops. They've got arenas. They've got a wonderful training track and spacious barns. And you can just see it in the faces of the connections of all of these horses, how happy they are to be involved in racing here at Woodbine. It's just it's a fantastic place to be.
I guess because of the size of this venue, what would you guys compare it to back in the States? Is it more like a Belmont Park because it is so massive and sprawling?
Yeah, I would say so.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, just because the spaciousness of it and the way that the backstretch is laid out, but even on, you know, we talk about the track on the front side, you've got a viewing area for the patrons to experience up close and personal with these horses. Yet you're not standing on top of each other. There's the area where that's inside that they saddle the horses. They bring them out into a beautiful European style open air a paddock for the jockeys and trainers and the connections to get together. So this really was designed in such a way that is good not only for the horses but for the patrons and the horsemen alike.
Yeah, and you're hearing the loose horse siren. There is a horse out on the course right now. They're in the process of apprehending him and or her, and then they will continue on with the morning training. As Jude mentioned, horses coming past us now. Still several horses on the outside of that inner Tepeda surface, not working on the turf course. All the workouts happening on that inner Tepeda track, and that is a course where they're going to contest the 157th Queen's Plate here tomorrow. Post time for the Queen's Plate, 5:36 Eastern. Our coverage, 4 to 6 Eastern time. You can visit our website for all that information. It'll be on SiriusXM. We will stream it worldwide on our website. And this is such a special race because it is Canada's oldest thoroughbred horse race, and it's the oldest continuously run race in North America. It dates all the way back to that inaugural running in 1860, JT.
Yeah, that's even before I was born.
The year before, right?
Yeah, a few years.
Yeah, and I found it interesting as I was doing some homework getting ready for the show that, you know, we call the Kentucky Derby the Run for the Roses, and then you've got all the different nicknames of our big races here in the States. But up here in Canada, the Queen's Plate, Jeff, is known as the Gallop for the Guineas. I thought that was interesting.
What does that mean?
Well, what that means is the first purse, I believe, was put up by Queen Victoria. And I think it was actually 50 guineas, which I don't know what that translates into today's Canadian or American dollars. But it was quite a bit of money in those days. So that's where that comes from, I believe.
Yeah, still running for the guineas.
There are a couple of ironic things there because the guineas, the minting of the guineas was discontinued in England during the reign of George III, whose forebear George I had instituted the gift of 50 guineas in racing, a tradition that, of course, remains through the guineas, but the guineas do not. I mean, the prize remains, but the guineas are not the actual prize anymore. And then the Queen's Plate. The Queen's Plate is not a plate. The Queen's guineas are not guineas, obviously, as we just told you. But
I'm confused now.
Yeah, I'm reading.
Somebody's
this,
running
by the way.
For something.
Don't read it. What are you trying to say?
It's no longer a plate. It's a trophy. It's a gold trophy.
All right.
Yeah, and there's no guineas involved, but they still gallop for the guineas.
Okay.
It's Canada, dude. Just go with it.
But I will say this: in the same way that when you're in Louisville for the Kentucky Derby, and not just at Churchill Downs, the racetrack for the event, but there's an energy, there's a dynamic in the town amongst the townspeople and the people coming in from all over the country, from all over the world. You have that same feeling here in Toronto. As soon as you land, it's Queen's Plate Week. It's a festival, the pageantry of it. And no question, I think we're in store for a pretty exciting event here on Queen's Plate Day. All the exciting colors and fashion and the energy around a race like this.
13 races scheduled for tomorrow's program. 5 stakes. 4 of those are graded. The Queen's Plate is worth $1 million, but it is not a graded stake because of the fact it is restricted only to horses bred in Canada. But boy, is it a contentious race, and we're going to cover it from all angles over the course of the next 2 hours. When we come back after our first break, we're going to be joined by Terry Finley of West Point Thoroughbreds as they get set to send out their very talented 3-year-old scholar athlete in tomorrow's Queen's Plate. Roger Atfield took the time to sit down with me yesterday in his office at his barn, and he talked about winning 8 Queen's Plates. Yeah, that is a record. He is tied for the most wins, and he can surpass that with a victory here tomorrow. But Roger Atfield, so, so good. You're going to hear that interview at 8:35 Eastern time. Then at 9 o'clock Eastern, the legendary Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley, who has won multiple Sovereign Awards, which is Canada's equivalent to the Eclipse Awards. He has won the Queen's Plate on four different occasions. He's going to be with us by phone at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Josie Carroll, yeah, she's certainly etched her name in the record books when it comes to the Queen's Plate. She's won it twice, and the first time she did it, she became the first and still only female trainer ever to win the race, and she has a couple of horses going tomorrow. And then we'll talk to Ken Ramsey at the end of the program. So an awful lot of things to get to. It's a very busy show. We'll do it all next right here on the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, at Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Adina Springs and the Adina Stallions are well represented in Sunday's 157th running of the Queen's Plate. 3 top contenders were bred, raised, and sold by Adina Springs. Scholar athlete, a son of Einstein, Esposito, who is by Adina Stallion and Hall of Famer Gosapper, and Shakamot. Plus, the likely Queen's Plate favorite, Amiz Gizmo, is a son of Adina Stallion, Giant Gizmo. And their brilliant stallion, Gosapper, is also represented by Gamble's Ghost, both homebreds for Tall Oaks Farm of Ivan Delos. In addition, Gosapper will be looking to sire back-to-back winners of the Queen's Plate after Stronach Stables homebred Shaman Ghost won last year's running. For more information on Gosapper, Giant Gizmo, and all the Adina Stallions, visit adinastallions.com. And look for your next future star at the upcoming Adina Springs yearling consignments, as Adina's exciting young stallions, Fort Larned and Point of Entry, will both be represented by their first crop.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what's going on in the insurance world?
Mike, with the yearling sales fast approaching, we offer Fall of the Hammer coverage to buyers for their auction purchases.
Why is Fall of the Hammer so important?
When the auctioneer drops the gavel and the buyer signs a sales slip, ownership transfers. There is an immediate exposure to the buyer for the purchase price. By calling our office prior to the sale, we can arrange for immediate protection, so there is no gap in coverage.
Are there any other exposures?
Absolutely. There is liability exposure in the event the yearling should cause bodily injury or property damage to others. An equine owner's liability policy will provide just the right coverage. It's stuff like this that keeps me awake at night.
Thanks, Joe, for speaking with us today. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe. Kentucky Downs kicks off a unique 5-day all-grass race meet in September. Live racing September 3rd, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 15th. And the stakes are high with $7.8 million in purses over the 5 days, an average of $1.56 million each day. Kentuckybreds will run for maiden special weight purses of $130,000 and allowance purses of $145,000. Maidens not bred in Kentucky will compete for $58,000 with top allowance for non-Kentuckybreds at $67,000. Learn more at KentuckyDowns.com.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And as they turn for home, it is still Scholar Athlete. On the far outside, Steamboat Bill, Conquest Superstar between horses. Down toward the inside, Sight Read Inspector Lindley got boxed in there. No place to go. And then comes Cave Johnson and Raise the Bar on the outside. And Vulcan's Fort from far behind. But it is Scholar Athlete. Scholar Athlete did it. By about 2 lengths in the end, a three-way photo that may have gone to Raise the Bar for second. Cave Johnson was right there, and so was Vulcan's Forge.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Ponta for the Pick Four, and our former jockey, Jeff Bloom, who is with us. Sitting in here this morning, we are live from Woodbine Racetrack in Ontario, Canada, getting set for the 157th running of the Queen's Plate, which you'll hear live with us tomorrow on the network. You can listen in throughout North America on Sirius 106, XM, Channel 201, and as always, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. You just heard the call from Larry Colmus. Huge, huge effort by Scholar Athlete last time out at Belmont Park. That was on May 12th. Dominated the allowance race. It was his first start with blinkers, and he will compete in tomorrow's Queen's Plate for owners West Point Thoroughbreds. And we're joined now by the man who heads up West Point Thoroughbreds. That is Terry Finley. Terry, welcome to the program, my friend. All right, we'll try to reconnect with Terry Finley here in just a moment. But they, of course, do send out Scholar Athlete, the 3-year-old son of Einstein out of an El Prado mare. And JT, when you think about pedigree, here's a horse that if you're going to go a mile and a quarter, like we're going to see in the Queen's Plate tomorrow, he certainly fits the bill from a pedigree perspective.
Oh, absolutely. He's got the pedigree of a horse that will stay the mile and a quarter. And as we were talking to Roger Atfield yesterday about the race, that's the one point that Roger brought up. You have to have a stayer in order to win the Queen's Plate, and he certainly has the pedigree. Einstein, just a very, very classy horse, and El Prado mare, so he should be able to run long distances and carry his speed.
And Jeff, he has a win here at Woodbine as well, broke his maiden here.
He did, and he sort of knocked around after breaking that maiden, looked like a horse that was going to go on to be a top horse up here at Woodbine, and it's interesting in that last victory back in May 12th, he went to the front and never looked in question. Like maybe he found his preferred running style, which is get out there, use his speed, and go on with it. And also, a good sign that Jose Ortiz comes up here to ride him.
Well, it's a great point. Both of his career victories have come when he's either been on the lead, as he was last time at Belmont, or when he was up close to the lead, as he was in that maiden win. The blinkers go on last time, JT. Maybe gave him a little more focus. Maybe the same strategy going to be in place here for tomorrow. But we'll find out when they run the Queen's Plate at 5:36 Eastern Time tomorrow afternoon.
On Saturday, July 16, 1965, nearly 60,000 racing fans gathered at Hollywood Park for the running of the Gold Cup over 10 furlongs on a superbly conditioned racing strip under a brilliant sun and a robin's egg blue sky. Most had come out to see if Native Diver, the 6-year-old homebred, would already become a local folk hero, could win yet another big one. In his two previous starts, Native Diver had beaten Viking Spirit by a neck at level weights and world record-equaling time of 120 flat for 7 furlongs in the Los Angeles Handicap, and had trounced a strong field in the 9-furlong American Handicap after being rested for 6 weeks. Swaps, the legendary Ellsworth hero, had been considered the best homegrown up until now, but Native Diver was pressing that reputation in no uncertain terms. He had had 21 stakes wins, all in California, and had earned over $400,000. In the field of challengers in this Gold Cup were the likes of Tronado, Meadowbrook Farm's solid performer, Ramont from the Foxcatcher Farm, and Ralph Lowe's Gogger. Native Diver was the high weight, packing an impost of 124, including regular rider Jerry Lambert. As the gate sprung open at the head of the stretch, Lambert gunned a Native Driver to the front with a terrific burst of speed, and by the time they came by the stands for the first time, Native Diver was six in front on the way to clocking a 22-1 first quarter. He continued setting all the fractions on an easy lead through the clubhouse turn and posted a fairly swift 44-2 for the first half. As the field straightened out for the long run down the backside, Lambert gave him a little bit of a breather, and two horses, Romant and Tronado, closed some ground until they were within 2.5 lengths of the leader. Native Diver had that margin at the three quarters, which had been turning a very quick 108-4. He increased his lead as they went on down around the turn and was still four in front as they swung to the top of the stretch. The mile had gone in 134-1. Gogger had been rolling from far back and was within striking distance with two furlongs to the wire. Native Diver had enough left to run the final quarter in 25 flat and increased his margin slightly to wind up a clear and decisive five-length winner. The final time for the mile and a quarter was 2:01, which equaled the legendary Kayak the Second's mark. Owner L.K. Shapiro was absolutely thrilled with the win because it was the first time one of his horses had won a $100,000 race, the first time he'd won at 10 furlongs, and the first time he'd won an American Classic race at that distance with top weight. To add to the luster of this outstanding thoroughbred, he came back to win the Gold Cup again the very next year while packing 126 pounds an even faster time, 2 minutes flat. The piece de resistance and the crowning glory was a third straight win in the Gold Cup at the age of 8 in a phenomenal time of 158-4. With the latter score, Native Diver reached the hallowed plateau of being a million-dollar earner on the racetrack. You see, my friends, like fine wines, this extraordinarily fine Californian, Native Diver, had become better with age.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
What is it about Tony's steaks and seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair strips. FlairStrips.com.
power.
But Tapazar is just playing too good today. And it's going to be Tapazar and Garrett Gomez coming home with his ears pricked to win the Sham Stakes.
Passion.
And a big performance from Tapazar and Cory Nakatani as they romp in the San Fernando.
Performance.
Tapazar's going to keep Rail Trip at bay. And Tapazar, a sterling performance today.
Gainsway Stallion Tapazar is a grade one winning miler by leading sire Tappet from the family of champion Untappable and is Tappet's only grade one winning miler at stud. Tapazar retired sound with more than $972,000 in earnings following a career in which he broke his maiden by 10 and a half lengths at Churchill Downs at two, went wire to wire to win the grade three Sham Stakes at three, and was a runaway winner of the grade two San Fernando and grade one Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at four.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Eddie Delahoussaye. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Damascus Dance, Splashing Success, sticks ahead in front. It's Splashing Success as they come to the quarter pole. Damascus Dance asks for all he's got by Sabrak. Creed is there. And with approval, bursts onto the scene at the head of the stretch. It's Splashing Success. Here comes Most Valiant. He's full of run. He shakes loose and he's gaining ground. It's Most Valiant at the eighth pole. With approval's going to try to chase him down to the inside. Damascus Dance. On the inside, it is Most Valiant, but With Approval is strong. With Approval and Most Valiant, they hit the wire together in a photo to win in the Queen's Plate. Most Valiant and With Approval.
I don't think there's any secret to it. I think I've just been very lucky, very fortunate to have horses that were capable of doing that, you know, and also very fortunate that they stayed healthy through the Triple Crowns, because that's the hardest part too. When you could have the best horse, and you've seen it happen in America a few times now, where probably the horse that was capable of actually pulling that off, you know, just hiccup somewhere along the line, or just went over the top a bit before one of the races, and it doesn't work. But so I've been very fortunate that way.
Now the Canadian Triple Crown is somewhat unique because it is run on three separate surfaces, so it takes a really special horse. It wasn't like that when you won your three. Talk about how much different it is trying to win the Triple Crown today.
Yeah, well, it's changed, actually. If you're talking just Triple Crown, in the past, like in Norcliffe's days, we didn't win the Triple Crown with him, but in those days, the first one was on the dirt, and the last two were both on the turf, but one being run at Ford Erie and one being run here. And in most times, the turf at Ford Erie would be very firm, and quite often here it would be soft to good. So you needed a horse that was very versatile on both surfaces, turf-wise, and then also had to be able to run on the dirt. Now we've got to the situation where we have, you know, an all-weather track for the first one and dirt for the second one and turf for the third one, which is, it's an interesting combination of races. And for a horse to pull that off, probably has to be a very versatile horse for sure.
In some ways, does that make it maybe even more difficult to win the Triple Crown now?
I would think it is. I would think so. I mean, we have certain horses that definitely prefer the synthetic to the dirt and vice versa. I don't think you see that much difference between all weather horses and turf. I think those horses both handle those surfaces very well, but probably don't handle the dirt that well. So it would be a very, very versatile horse for sure.
I'm glad you mentioned the name Norcliffe, because it takes us back to 1976, 40 years ago, that you won your very first Queen's Plate. When you think back on that day, what goes through your mind?
Yeah, it's a long time ago, isn't it? I sort of feel really old when you say that. But that was a very special time. It was a dream come true, because fairly quickly in my life, really, because, you know, in 1970, when Almaner won it, that was the first one that I'd seen, and I, and I, you know, remembered saying to myself, I'm going to win that one of these days. And it came along, you know, only 6 years later. And in those days, my parents used to come over every summer and spend the summer with me. And Father was really interested in racing and what have you. And it was a really, really special time for sure. And a very special time, actually, yeah.
Let's spend a few minutes talking about those three individual Triple Crown winners. And With Approval comes along and wins by a nose here in the Queen's Plate. To this date, it is still the smallest winning margin in the history of the race. Then Izvestia, a couple of years later, comes back and wins by the largest margin in the history of a race. And then you had Pietzky a few years after that. Tell me about those three.
Yeah, well, With Approval, he didn't like the dirt at all. He really didn't. And I mean, we were very, very fortunate in the plate with him because it was literally one on the bob. And, you know, if the bob had gone the other way around, we wouldn't even be talking about it. So that was a real big relief. And the Prince of Wales was fairly close, but, one of those situations where you weren't sure whether you won or not. And then once he got on the turf, because he was a different animal altogether. Izvestia was a totally different horse. Izvestia could do anything. And I was quite convinced all I had to do was keep him healthy and well. And, he proved that to us. And he won all those races very comfortably. And there was only one little thing with Izvestia. He had quite bad feet. And going into the Prince of Wales, I had a great blacksmith working with me, and we were having heart attacks going into that race because his feet, the walls of his feet, had fallen apart really badly, and they didn't have stick-on shoes that was as reliable as they are today. And he ran in the Prince of Wales with only two nails in one of the shoes, and I never told the Wilmots any of this at the time because I didn't want them staying awake at night like I was. But that was the only thing that was, you know, maybe going to get him beaten, you know. But and then Pietzky was a very, very good horse. But he was going to be a much, much better horse on the grass, and I was really looking forward to him as a four-year-old, as a grass horse, and of course we never got that far. He was, you know, he was a really, really nice horse. And actually, when he won the last leg of the Triple Crown, I had a little bit of a heart attack there in that race because I'd said to Greg Perrett, you know, I said, he's so much the best, this horse. And I said, if he blasts away from that gate, you'll be six lengths in front right off the bat, and I'd really rather not see that going a mile and a half. So I said, you know, see if you can, you know, grab hold of him a bit coming out of the gate. And he broke really, really hard, and Craig grabbed hold of him, and the saddle slipped right up his neck. And he rode the whole race up on the horse's withers. But a lot of people actually probably never noticed that, but I noticed it. And there was no way that he could have ridden the horse in a tight finish or anything. I mean, he was just sitting up there and steered him around there, and he was that good to win it anyway. But that was kind of unnerving, you know.
Outside of the first Queen's Plate victory and those three Triple Crowns, what are some of the other Queen's Plate memories that are always going to stand out to you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there was a couple of situations where, you know, we certainly weren't the best horse. One of them was a horse called Market Control. We ran him actually. I believe we ran him for 40,000 as a 2-year-old, and as a 3-year-old, he developed a lot better. But he was an out and out stayer, and I can't remember why I missed a prep. I missed a prep race here for some reason or other, maybe a cough or something. I can't even remember. But anyway, I needed a race, and I went to Detroit, and I ran, I think it was called the Piston, I believe it was called. And I ran in a race there as a prep because I really felt that I could get to, you know, he'd be a good plate horse. And so we ran in that race, and there was a... an accident in the race, and the horse fell, or two horses fell, and he had to jump one of the horses, and it was a very, very good race for him. But I think he finished fourth or fifth, and it sort of went unnoticed, you know, a little bit on how well he might have actually run in that race. And I said to the Wilmots, you know, I mean, this horse will stay all day, and there's so much speed in the plate, and I think, you know, that we could, you know, we could run them down if they hiccup, you know. And that's exactly what happened, and he came running and won that. And now, Regal Discovery was actually a similar type of situation. You know, he was a horse that was definitely going to get the mile and a quarter. And there were horses in there, there were better horses than him, but I couldn't see him going a mile and a quarter, and that's the only way that we won those races, actually. And, you know, that's what I'm saying about coming into the race this year here. You know, there's a number of horses aren't going to get the mile and a quarter, you know. And so, you know, come from behind or can go and nail you, yes, for sure.
Yeah, tell me about your horse in this year's running, Shakamat. What makes you so confident that he could be the one to give you number nine?
Well, I mean, I'm confident in him in the respect that he's a very, very nice horse. I'm not as confident of him getting the mile and a quarter as well. I thought last year I would win that the thing for sure, almost. You know, like, I mean, the very good staying horse with Danish Dynaformer. And I really thought that I could win it, and I still think that maybe I could have won it last year. But the Shakamat ran a very, very powerful mile and eighth here when he was a two-year-old. He's got natural speed, and he has a great desire to win, you know. And so, you know, that makes a dangerous horse anyway. But, you know, there's some nice horses in this year's plate, and there's one or two horses that are definitely going to get the mile and a quarter. So it's going to be an interesting race.
For our American listeners, they often follow the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. They're very familiar with that, but they're not as familiar with a race like the Queen's Plate. Put into words what it means to be here for the Queen's Plate and what the Queen's Plate's all about.
Well, it's got, you know, it's steeped in tradition, isn't it? And, you know, it's a long, long history of this race, and it's Canada's premier race. I mean, you know, everybody knows the Queen's Plate, whether they might not follow racing, but they know the Queen's Plate, and so that makes it kind of a special race. And there used to be more pageantry to the event than there is today, but which is a shame. That's still not quite there, but it's still an important day, and it's, you know, and people like to come out and watch it, and it's usually a very good race.
And you're a very important part of the history of that race too. So good luck on Sunday, and go get number nine. Thanks for taking the time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Hall of Fame trainer Roger Atfield joining us yesterday at the barn area, and always a delight to catch up with Roger. He is one of the most pleasant people you're going to be around in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and looking for that ninth victory coming up here tomorrow with Shakamat, and we'll see if he can pull it off. Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom. We are on the apron, trackside at Woodbine. A few technical issues there, but heck, it's an international show and live radio, so you have to expect some of those things from time to time. We do apologize. We are going to be joined by Terry Finley in a few moments. We'll get to him after our next commercial break. But guys, just to wrap up a little bit here about Roger Atfield. First of all, winning eight Queen's Plates, eight of any stakes race is remarkable, but eight Queen's Plates, the equivalent to the Kentucky Derby here in Canada. Jude, as a former trainer, could you ever imagine being in that position? Just incredible.
Not with my horses.
Think about that. You were there for the interview yesterday.
Yeah, well, you know, I tweeted out this morning, anytime you can spend the morning with Roger Atfield. I mean, the guy's just, he's an amazing man. He's in his 70s. He was breaking a warm blood and broke his leg. Breaking a warm blood in your 70s. I mean, you know, the guy's a legend here in Canada. He's a fine man. He's got a great sense of humor. Just can't say enough nice things about Roger Atfield. Hall of Fame, dual Hall of Famer, Canadian Hall of Fame, United States Hall of Fame, and just a great guy and a fantastic horseman. And you go to his barn, and his help is outstanding. Everybody was so nice to us yesterday, and you know, just really enjoyed our visit. And the guy's amazing, and you heard in that interview how thoughtful he is of his horses and how much time he devotes to it. It's a round-the-clock job for him, as for most trainers, but he's amazing.
Yeah, and it's not just about having the good horses. Obviously, clearly winning a race like the Queen's Plate eight times, you can tell why that happens when you go to his barn and you see the attention to detail. It's a well-oiled machine over there at Roger Outfield's barn, but there's no tension, there's no stress. Everybody's in their place doing what they're supposed to be doing, and you can see that Roger clearly oversees the entire operation, and he has his hands and he's touching everything that's going on. As you brought up, this guy in his 70s breaking warm bloods, he was the guy after winning a race here yesterday at Woodbine protecting everybody from getting hurt from a fractious horse going into the winner's circle. I mean, the guy's on top of everything, and you can tell that he's not afraid to mix it up.
It was funny. Woodbine asked our group here at HRN to make the trophy presentation for that stakes race that Roger won yesterday. And the way that this works here at Woodbine, there is a regular winner circle for non-stakes races, which is right next to us here this morning. It's on the apron side. Then you have to go across all three of the courses, the turf course, the tapeta, and the harness track, to get to the inside winner circle, which is where they greet all of the stakes winners. So yesterday with Roger winning that race, he came down from his box seat and he walked across all three courses, hobbling on that boot, which is on his left leg, and getting across to there. And I made the comment to you, Jude, that do you ever think that maybe Roger wishes he won an allowance race instead so he didn't have to walk so far?
Probably not. The guy's so game, and his filly didn't want to go into the winner's circle because the flags were flying and making a lot of noise, and she was very apprehensive about that. And as Jeff said, you know, the filly's all over the winner's circle, and Roger's on her hind end trying to push her over, and here he is in a walking boot, a guy in his mid-70s, and you're just going, please, filly, don't kick him, you know. Well, I don't want to be here for that.
I was waiting for the filly to step on him, and his only concern, it wasn't about the winner's circle celebration, it was protecting all of us idiots standing off to the side as this filly was backing up into us.
Yeah. It wasn't the best scenario for really anybody in the winner's circle, including the winner. So as my dad always says, there's always more horses' asses in the winner's circle than there are horses. So
that was true yesterday, too, by the way. Yeah,
very true.
All right. We're going to get to another break. We'll come back. We will be rejoined by Terry Finley of West Point Thoroughbreds to talk about his Queen's Plate contender, Scholar Athlete. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan?
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I've thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Apollopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
Ed's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince, the most expensive yearling from the great Pioneer of the Niles debut crop, and a top-class juvenile winning the Grade 2 Nashua before his memorable battle with Eclipse Champion Honor Code in the Remsen. At 3, Cairo Prince was simply sensational in the Grade 2 Holy Bull Stakes, making him the early book favorite for the Kentucky Derby.
Cairo Prince has run away! Cairo Prince and Luis Saez with an emphatic win in the Holy Bull!
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince. Think about it.
A multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire sprinter.
It's going to be very close at the finish, and here's the wire. It's Palace, the winner.
The best son of leading sire City Zip.
And it will be Palace, the winner by 3/4 of a length. And Palace dazzles here and wins by 3.5 lengths.
Palace, new for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa, direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today. It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Ramona's Wildcat, Athena outside, Milo nowhere to go down inside. I'm a looker, switches back out, time's running out. Athena comes away with the lead and pulls off the upset. 18-1 on the wire.
Athena, the daughter of Darley Stallion Street Sense, scored another stakes victory in the Roxolana at Churchill Downs this past weekend. And her winning effort makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Since 2013, only Bernardini and Tappet have bested the five Grade 1 winners on dirt by Darley Stallion Street Sense. From five crops to race, Street Sense has had a Grade 1 winner in every crop, including Sweet Reason, Aubie K, Callback, Wedding Toast, and Street Fancy, plus Hallowed Crown in Australia. And remember, Street Sense and future Darley Stallion Nyquist are the only horses ever to win both the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the Kentucky Derby. To learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
This is jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Islanders of Canada Pipes and Drums with a rendition of the Maple Leaf Forever. That is the version of My Old Kentucky Home, to put it into terms that you may understand. Back in the United States, they play the Maple Leaf Forever as the horses come onto the track for the Queen's Plate. That will be played, actually sung here tomorrow, shortly at the Eastern Time when they go to the post for the 157th running of that historic race. And you're going to hear it right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, XM channel 201, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. It'll give you some chills if you have a horse in the race, and Terry Finley of West Point Thoroughbreds does. He sends out Scholar Athlete, fresh off of an allowance victory at Belmont Park on the grass last time out, and Terry is with us now. We tried to connect earlier, didn't make it happen, but we're making it happen for you right now. Terry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike, great to be on with you guys, and I can tell you, I never doubted for a second that they would keep you off the air.
Hey, they tried, but our friends north of the border couldn't even do it. Hey, great to have you back with us, my friend. Scholar Athlete, that powerhouse win last time out on the turf at Belmont. He comes here for this historic race. And, Terry, he certainly looks like one of the horses to beat in that race tomorrow.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a very good race, and you know, there's on paper, there's no horse that you would say, "Wow, we're gonna have to run super, super well," and the other horse is gonna have to run poorly to beat them. There are probably six or seven horses that you can make a legitimate case for, and you know, for $1 million and the biggest race in Canada, I think you're in a good spot if you're in the spot that we're in.
Earlier in the program, we talked about his pedigree being by Einstein out of an El Prado mare. That certainly fits the bill for a mile and a quarter race like the Queen's Plate. When you picked him out, were you automatically thinking Queen's Plate even early on?
Yes, we were. And I think most people do, Mike, when they go to these sales and they look at Canadian breeds, unless they're by a sprint sire, you're always thinking about that. Right, because you know the foal crops are not huge. Obviously, it's a quality program up there. You know, a lot of well-bred horses that do well. But, yes, inevitably you're going to be thinking about trying to get to the Queen's Plate when you buy a well-bred and a good, solid Canadian bred. So I can say honestly that we talked about it at dinner the night that we bought them. It'd be great to you'll be what would have been about 15 months we were talking about. It'd be great to be on the cusp of our running in the Queen's Plate. So we know a vast majority of times things don't work out and according to plan in the business, but in this case, up to now, things have worked out pretty well with him.
Did you get some Canadian people involved in your partnership on this horse?
There are a couple, Jude. Yeah, you know, it's they love their partnerships up there. There are a couple that are local. We've been okay. I would have thought we'd have more people from Canada, but you know, we'll keep working up there, right? Everybody knows it's one person at a time when you're trying to put together the partnerships that we do. But I'd like to think if we run well tomorrow, we'd have a shot to get a couple more up there.
Terry, you mentioned that, of course, when you look at a horse like this at the auctions, you're thinking Queen's Plate. But what about running in a race like this? $1 million Queen's Plate, you said it's the biggest race in Canada, the history, the pageantry. I mean, it's a good feeling, isn't it?
I would say so, yes, Jeff. You know, it's funny. We all down here in America, you know, we know that how big the Derby is, and even all of us being in the business, we get a sense from our friends and the people that we went to school with and everybody else that they don't really pay attention to the Derby. And then the first Saturday May comes along and they're calling you or they're sending you a note. And if you read and you kind of look at the amount of emphasis and attention that they give to the Queen's Plate up in Canada, it's really pretty cool. You know, it's a world, or, you know, it's all across the country and it's a huge country. And I think for the most part, you know, the country stops in late afternoon on this on the Sunday to take a look at the Queen's Plate, and it'll be a talking point all over the country for a couple of days. So yeah, it is. It's really cool, and it's cool when you know that that you have a legitimate shot to get there. So actually, I was just sitting with my wife, and she said, "It'd be really nice to win the Queen's Plate." I said, "Yeah, you're right, Deb." So. We'll certainly appreciate the ride and the path up to the race and see if we get lucky.
Terry, yesterday morning I had a chance to actually visit with your horse back at the barn, and he seems like he's got a ton of personality, you know, really bright eye, and looks like he's got a wonderful coat on him. He really seems like he's coming into this race the right way, but talk to us a little bit about this horse's personality.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. You know, we had talked about when we bought him, he just kind of had that something. I was talking to my daughter. You know, she was there at the sale with me, along with Jeff Lifson. He's a neat horse. You know, we saw him actually work the 7/8 at Fair Hill last Saturday. So, you know, we were around him. We were there about 45 minutes after he worked, and he just stood there in the sun, and I said, there's a horse really doing well inside and outside. So, you know, I think the neat thing about that is if you go into a race like this and you know you're doing well and you're sound and you're happy, I think the good thing is, you know, you don't have to make any excuses. If you get beat, you get beat, and you just want the right horse and the best horse on that particular day. So I think that's a very comforting feeling as we approach the Queen's Plate.
So it sounds like your family's all into winning the Queen's Plate, so this must be some spectacular wedding you're attending this weekend, huh?
Yeah, I got locked in, but a long-term client, and I think the other good thing, Jude, is that the wedding is at the Racing Museum, so I couldn't bypass a good wedding but about that. And actually, Tommy Bellhouse and I, we committed about 2 months ago. And in the back of my mind, when I sent the card in the RSVP, I remember saying to myself, boy, this is the same day as the Queen's Plate. And obviously we hadn't run at Belmont with this horse, but, you know, we were thinking about it. But, you know, we'll be sitting and we'll watch. And I just hope it's not really right in the middle of the ceremony, because I'd have to shift to the back of the of the ceremony and you know, take a look at this race. But all in all, it's fine. We've got a good, I guess there are about 30 partners or, you know, 30, you know, guests and partners that are going up, are traveling up from America to go up to Canada. So, you know, we're supporting the local on the economy up there, and I think that's what they're looking for. And we all know, you know, Woodbine does a great job with owners and trainers when, you know, when they visit. So all in all, it's a really good and a positive situation up there.
Terry, just let me remind you that if it does go right in the middle of the ceremony, you can always bring your earbuds, you can pop them into your cell phone, you can listen at horseracingradio.net. So we got you covered. I have your back.
I've got the station already pre-programmed, so you're set. We will be listening to you guys.
Good man. Terry, just a couple of minutes left. We do have to wrap it up, get to the top of the hour break. But before we do, I noticed this is the 25-year anniversary for West Point Thoroughbred. So first of all, congratulations on that milestone. That will happen in August. And, boy, what a thrill it would be if you could add the Queen's Plate to that lofty resume of West Point here in 2016.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. You know, we're pleased and honored and all those other things that you say when you have an anniversary, you have a special event for a company or individually. And, you know, you think back to all the people that supported, I do, all the people that supported me and the company. And it's really humbling to think of the number of partners that have entrusted us. So in early August up here at Saratoga, we'll celebrate and, you know, we'll look back and we'll look forward, right? So I'd like to think that the best is yet to come for us, but we certainly appreciate and we remember all the great things that have occurred in our companies, in the history of our company and the people that have been involved. So just a really great feeling to look back and to look forward.
Well, Terry, enjoy the wedding tomorrow and enjoy the Queen's Plate. All the best with Scholar Athlete, and let's hope he can get it done for you. Good luck.
Absolutely. All the best to you guys. Keep up the great work.
All right, Terry Finley, West Point Thoroughbreds here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, Scholar Athlete may be the perfect horse to make your TwinSpires HRRN bet back horse. And here's the way that works. You go to twinspires.com/HRRN. You can do it right now. You have until post time of the Queen's Plate tomorrow afternoon to pick out one horse in the Queen's Plate. You're going to make a $7 win bet and a $7 show bet on that one horse. It's a $14 total wager. If your horse finishes worse than third, you're going to lose your $14. But it doesn't even matter because Twin Spires will refund that whole $14 wager right back into your account. So go there now, a no-risk $14 bet on tomorrow's Queen's Plate. It's twinspires.com/HRRN. Scholar Athlete, he might be the perfect choice because he might be, what, 5-6-1, right, in that ballpark?
He's 12-1 on the morning line, so that's even better. But
yeah.
I hope they ignore him because I think he's got a good chance.
I think to Terry's point, there's not one horse in here where you say that horse has to win the race. It is a very wide open field, and a horse listed at 12-1 morning line with Scholar Athlete's credentials, I think, is a very legitimate play in the race.
All right, very busy second half of the program coming up, and it kicks off with Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley, who is a four-time Queen's Plate winner. He's going to join us in just a couple of moments. Josie Carroll, the first female trainer ever to win the Queen's Plate, and she hasn't just done it once, she's done it twice. She'll be with us at 9:25 Eastern Time. And then owner Ken Ramsey will be here at 9:45 Eastern to help wrap up the program. He sends out Sir Dudley Diggs in tomorrow's Queen's Plate, and that's a tremendous story as well. Stay with us. We're going to pause 10 seconds for station identification, and we're back with Hour 2 on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Kentucky Downs.
Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby.
Brody's Paws at the 16th pole. Chased by Jerry Wine. My man Sam running huge from last. But Brody's Paws in front. Brody's Cause for Luis Saez to win the Toyota Bluegrass.
And it's Mo Amen who has taken the lead on the outside. Mo Amen to the front. Pulling away from Zulu Fellowship is third as Mo Amen pulls away.
But Exaggerator is finishing with conviction this afternoon. Exaggerator, an absolutely brilliant victory in the Santa Anita Derby.
Now here's Mike Pena, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs, rolling on the Horse Racing Radio Network, continuing to make history for you this morning as we broadcast live for the very first time from Woodbine Racetrack in Ontario, Canada. Of course, our second international broadcast in the history of HRN. You remember earlier this year, back in the first Saturday in March, we came to you from Barbados with coverage of the Sandy Lane Gold Cup. Tomorrow, it's the 157th running of the Queen's Plate, and you'll hear it 4 to 6 Eastern Time, Sirius 106, XM 201. Make that note, different channels than you're listening on right now. Sirius 106, XM 201, and of course, streaming worldwide on your computer, your smartphone, and your tablet at horseracingradio.net. Mike Pena, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom, we are on the apron here at Woodbine, right next to the turf course, which, as we told you at the top of the broadcast, is somewhat unique. It's on the outside of the main dirt course, which is a Tapeta racing surface, newly installed this year. And then, of course, on the inside of that one, you have the harness track. So three separate race courses all in one. It is really a unique setting here, JT.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful, and I love the outside turf course. Think about that. A mile and a half turf course, very, very wide. You can set up several different rails if you want to. There's lots of different distances, and tomorrow the first race is going to be run in a right-handed fashion, something we don't often see in North America.
You know, it's interesting when you hear the executives here at Woodbine talk about the European style run race where they're turning right. You have to take into consideration there are things that are associated with that configuration, and not just going the wrong way on the track, but there's a lot of stuff up here for the Queen's Plate, and some tents, some flags that normally aren't there, and horses are going to be looking at things in the grandstand that they wouldn't normally be seen. So a lot of firsts for some of those horses running in that direction over the course.
Yeah, they might even get a look at the Queen's box.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, the Queen's box right now is over to our right, and it is being all polished up and get ready for tomorrow. That is where the dignitaries will watch the races here tomorrow afternoon, including that 157th Queen's Plate. Somebody whose name is synonymous with the Queen's Plate and with Canadian racing is retired Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley. And here is somebody who enjoyed a remarkable career. He's a multiple Sovereign Award winner. He's won an Eclipse Award in the United States. And he's won the Queen's Plate on four different occasions, and we are privileged now to be joined by Sandy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sandy, happy Queen's Plate weekend, and welcome to the program. You guys really know how to roll out the red carpet here in Canada.
You know what? I'm glad you're enjoying it. I've always been very proud of Woodbine Racetrack. Of course, I rode my first race at Woodbine. I rode my last race at Woodbine, which was pretty cool for myself. But I know when I first started riding at Woodbine, I always loved Woodbine Racetrack, and I thought it was a very unique track with the training track and all the facilities that we had. And I always remember going to different racetracks around North America and around the world, actually, and I used to take a brochure with me of Woodbine Racetrack. And as a Canadian, I was pretty proud of it.
When you first started riding, could you ever imagine that you'd be doing interviews like this someday as a two-time Sovereign Award, as a Hall of Fame member, and as a four-time Queen's Plate winner?
You know what? Not in a million years, Jeff. I remember when I first started on the racetrack, of course, Avelino Gomez was the king of racing around Woodbine, and he was definitely my idol. I remember I knew nothing about horses when I started on the racetrack, so I was a groom for a year, then I exercised for a year before I got to ride my first race. And I don't know if you remember or not, but Avelino Gomez, he actually started the jump off the horse. He used to leap in the air and land like a graceful athlete. I think he was the very first one to do that. I remember galloping horses. I was in the stall one morning, hadn't ridden the race yet, and thought I was a little bit cocky maybe, and I thought I was going to try that Avelino Gomez jump. I tried it, and my feet ended up getting hung up in the stirrups. Thank goodness I was in the stall. But Avelino Gomez was definitely my idol back then, and all I wanted to do is kind of get my name on the program, and that would have been really cool. Never thinking in a million years that things would work out the way they did.
Well, you were tied with Avelino Gomez and Robin Platts, four wins each in the Queens Plate. But one thing that I remember when you first started riding was your long hair, and you took kind of a lot of guff from trainers about that. Talk about that part about it. You had the most beautiful hair.
Oh, thank you. Actually, the Queen was here for the Queens Plate 1 year, and I have a picture of it, actually, and it's a picture of me from behind with the Queen and Mr. E.P. Taylor in the shot. And, yeah, I've got those locks that are down past my shoulders. And that was kind of the era back then. I remember the Beatles, they're the first ones to have the long hair. And then different other stars and athletes and that started with the long hair. And I'll never forget one time I went to Arkansas. I was definitely the only one with the long hair there. And I remember my agent saying, "Sandy, don't you think you need a haircut?" And back then, I just thought, I thought it was, the way I should have my hair, and I was happy with it. I always took good care of it, so I thought it was kind of the in thing to do back then.
Sandy, you mentioned that you rode your first race here at Woodbine and your last race here at Woodbine, but correct me if I'm wrong. Back in 2008, they had the Living Legends race at Santa Anita. And I believe you were aboard a horse there that crossed the finish line first.
Uh-oh. You got me on that one. That's right, too. I didn't ride my last race at Woodbine. I rode my last race at Santa Anita. That's a good one. You guys have done your homework, that's for sure.
I was there, actually, standing on the finish line and marveled at the fact that so many of these Living Legends were able to get back in the saddle. I mean, how difficult of a task was that to get back into race fit shape so you could ride a race?
Well, I just remember Lafitte Pincoy called me up one day, and as you mentioned, it's about 7 or 8 years ago. I can't believe it's that long ago. But he said, "Sandy, we're trying to get this Legends race together. Looks like we may have 7 Hall of Fame jockeys, and you would be the 8th, and we'd like to include you in being in the race." And I said, "Wow, Lafitte." I said, that's a great honor. I appreciate the call. And I said, "If you get the race together, definitely give me a call back." When I hung up the phone, I hadn't ridden for 10 years, hadn't been on a thoroughbred or at the starting gate in 10 years. And I thought to myself, what did I just get myself into? I weighed 122 pounds, and, of course, I was a little out of shape. I started going to the gym more often, and I actually live here in Oshawa. And I live right across the road from Winfield Farms. So when Lafitte called me back and he said, "You've got a month to get ready." So I started getting on horses across the road at Winfield's. I got down to, when I went back to Santa Anita, I think it was a month later, I weighed 108. So I got in pretty good shape for the race, and I was just hoping I would get a good horse, which I did.
And you were probably one of the younger riders in there.
You know what? That's a really good point. When you think of Angel Cordero, Cinto Vasquez, holy cow, I couldn't believe that those guys rode in that Legends race. It was fantastic.
I hope there was some smack talk coming around that final turn.
You know what, we actually had a meeting beforehand. Of course, Pat Day said a prayer for us, and Jerry Bailey, he kind of took charge too, and he said, this, it's an exciting race to be in and everything. I'm a little bit nervous about it. Everybody is. Let's just try and make it around safe, the best horse win, but not do anything crazy out there, which that was on our minds, just everybody make it around safe. Sure. You want to try and win the race, but at the same time, you're not going to shut somebody off or try and go through a hole that's not there. But it ended up working out well. Everybody made it back safe and sound, and it was a great experience.
Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley joining us on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. Sandy, I mentioned those 4 Queen's Plate victories, and of course tomorrow they'll run the Queen's Plate for the 157th time. Take me back through those 4 wins. The first one coming in 1970. Almaner, am I pronouncing the name correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, there was another take filly. Me back through the 4.
Well, actually, there was a filly in there, and her name is Fran Felouche. She was a favorite, and I'm pretty sure Ron Turcotte was on her at that time. And I just remember Almaner was like second or third choice. And that was my first victory in the Queen's Plate. I had just lost my apprenticeship, and it was just a tremendous thrill. And I'll never forget that after I won the race, the owners and the trainer invited me out for, you know, a celebration party. So I remember going out and staying out till about 1 o'clock in the morning, and then I had about 8 mounts the next day. And I had a pretty bad headache the next day. I really wasn't a drinker, but that night I had a couple of glasses of champagne, and I had a pretty good headache the next day. So that one's very memorable. The next one was Kennedy Road, actually, the next year. And Kennedy Road was probably the toughest horse I've ever ridden in Post Parade. He was mean and nasty and very, very tough to get to the starting gate. But I'll tell you what, once he got to the gate, he really was the best horse in the race. He went down to California after that, and Bill Shoemaker rode him. Charlie Whittingham trained him, and he had great success in California as well. So he was cut out to be a really, really good horse. After that, it was L'Angeleur, and L'Angeleur, he was a pretty amazing horse, too. He was definitely the best horse in the race. He was just a very powerful horse. Actually won the Laurel Futurity on him, and he beat some really good horses in that race as a two-year-old. So he was just an amazing horse as well. And then my last one, of course, was on Regal Embrace. And Regal Embrace was owned by E.P. Taylor. And about 12 years before I won that race, I was at Winfield Farms looking for a job, thinking about becoming a jockey, a little snotty-nosed kid, 17 years old. And now 12 years later, here I am in the winner's circle with probably the greatest owner of all time in Canada, and now in the winner's circle in the Queen's Plate, having won on his horse. That was just an amazing thrill as well.
The Queen's Plate, not quite American listeners. Put into words what this race means to the country.
Well, you know what? It's a royal tradition. Okay, it's named after the Queen. Way back when, of course, it was named after the king. That was a little bit before my days. But just to have royalty here is a tremendous honor and thrill. Anytime as a jockey you get to ride in a race called the Queen's Plate, it's the ultimate. I know there's probably races that are worth a little bit more around the world, around the country. But, you know, if you could ever win the Queen's Plate, that is the one as a Canadian that you'd want to win. Of course, this year, Queen Elizabeth's not going to be there, but Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, Elizabeth Dodgewell, will be making the presentation. And it's always the thrill to be not only in the race, but to have won the race is just amazing.
Well, Sandy, you're all class, and I really appreciate you taking a little time with us here this morning, looking back on those four Queen's Plate victories, and all the best moving forward, my friend, and really appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen, and enjoy your time at Woodbine, and hopefully have you back again sometime.
Yeah, we'll hope to see you out here tomorrow. Will you be coming out to the races?
I'll be out there for sure. Are you guys going to be on the apron?
We will. We will. Come say hello.
I'll come by and see you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Deal.
All right. Hall of Famer Sandy Hawley. What a class act, and somebody who represents the game, not only here in Canada, but around the world so, so well. Great ambassador for the sport. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Cool visit, huh?
Yeah, Sandy's such a great guy. And, you know, another influence he had on my life was when he won the Barbados Gold Cup. I watched that race on television, and it was that race that sparked my interest in Barbados in the Gold Cup. So he's been, he probably doesn't know it, but he's been a very important part of Jude Feld's life.
Jeff, what made him such a good rider?
You know, that's always a tough question when people ask that about a guy who's in the Hall of Fame and accomplished so much as a race rider. I think, you know, Sandy was one of those guys that definitely had a good head on his shoulders. You know, he had an incredible sense of pace, assessing the layout and the way the race was going to unfold, and, you know, he was a fierce competitor. You know, he's one of the class acts in the business, but also, you know, competitive and quite an athlete. And I think he honed his skills, you know, the right way at a very early age, and, you know, he continued to learn and to, you know, enhance his abilities, you know, on the racetrack. And I think, you know, when you take all those little pieces, you know, he was certainly a strong rider. He could finish on a horse. His horses always seemed to be in the right place. And he was, you know, a horseman, a student of the game, and really could assess the way the race was going to play out.
Well, in addition to his four wins in the Queen's Plate, Sandy Hawley won the Canadian Oaks 8 times. He won the Coronation Futurity on five different occasions. And how about this statistic? He has been the leading rider in Canada a remarkable 9 times in his career, which saw him win 6,450 races. And Sandy Hawley and his visit today, certainly appreciated. If you miss any portion of this show, the visit with Sandy, the visit with Roger Atfield or Terry Finley in the first half of the program, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast later today or at your leisure anytime. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net. We'll get to a break. We'll come back. We're going to be joined by Josie Carroll in just a few moments, and then Ken Ramsey at the end of the program. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Kentucky Downs kicks off a unique 5-day all-grass race meet in September. Live racing September 3rd, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 15th. And the stakes are high with $7.8 million in purses over the 5 days, an average of $1.56 million each day. Kentucky Breds will run for maiden special weight purses of $130,000 and allowance purses of $145,000. Maidens not bred in Kentucky will compete for $58,000 with top allowance for non-Kentucky Breds at $67,000. Learn more at KentuckyDowns.com.
Justin Phillip, a blue blood sprinter whose first crop had been highly acclaimed at the sales by the exciting young sire First Samurai and a half brother to three other graded stakes winners, including Algorithms and Grade 1 winning Kentucky Derby prospect Greenpoint Crusader. Justin Phillip made 32 lifetime starts, 23 in graded stakes, with 9 buyer speed figures of 100 or better.
And Justin Phillip will do it. He was a monster in the mud.
And Justin Phillip will prove best in the Count Fleet Sprint.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by 2.
With first crop foals bringing up to $110,000 at the 2015 fall sales, Justin Phillip had a weanling sales average of more than $50,000, and he stands for a value price stud fee of only $5,000. Justin Phillip at Castleton Lions. Are you a believer? Visit CastletonLions.com.
And they're off in New York. The premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Grade 1 winner Data Link by world-renowned sire Warfront. Data Link scored in the prestigious Grade 1 Makers 46 Mile at Keeneland. Then set a new course record in the Grade 2 Monmouth Stakes. With a pedigree free of Mr. Prospector in the first four generations, Data Link is the perfect outcross option. His first weanlings turned heads, selling well above the stud fee. Data Link at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Fans, welcome to a big three-day weekend at Santa Anita. On Saturday, the Grade 3 Affirmed Stakes for 3-year-olds at a mile and a 16th will highlight a 9-race card. And be sure to mark Monday, July 4th on your calendar, as it's also Fan Appreciation Day at the Great Race Place. Additionally, we guarantee $500,000 in the late pick 4 and $100,000 in the pick 6. First post time is at 1:30. Admission gates open at 11:30 a.m. Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're inside the quarter pole, Edenwald and Sterwins. Who will blink first? Sterwins on the outside, to the inside, Edenwald. Now a cough has flattened out a bit, then Shoaily Smooth. Edenwald on the inside is running the race of his life. They're in the final 16th of a mile. Edenwald and a 27th running of the Queen's Plate. Stirwins was second, a show photo between Malakoff and Ascot Bill.
Dan Loisel with the call of that 2006 running of the Queen's Plate, and Edenwald getting the victory for Josie Carroll that afternoon. That was a historic win, as Josie would win her very first Queen's Plate and become the first female trainer ever to saddle a winner of this historic race. And certainly Edenwald going to be remembered by Josie Carroll. She is set to join us here in just a few moments. We're waiting for her to stop by as we are live from Woodbine Racetrack in Ontario, Canada. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Kentucky Downs, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom. And guys, this does give us an opportunity to run down the itinerary here for tomorrow, so to speak. We'll be back with our coverage of not only the Queen's Plate, but the Singspiel and the Dance Smartly, a couple of graded stakes leading up to the Queen's Plate. You'll hear those 4 to 6 Eastern time tomorrow. They're going to air on Sirius 106 XM. One, and they will stream worldwide on your computer, your smartphone, or any mobile device at horseracingradio.net.
Josie's walking over even as we speak.
Yes, she is. Here she comes, strutting her stuff as a two-time Queen's Plate winner. How about that?
Yeah, that's quite a accomplishment, really.
Yeah, it's one thing to win it once, but you know, you win it twice, you're starting to get a little bit cocky, right? Maybe?
I don't think so.
I don't think so at all. She's a total sweetheart, and she is with us now. She is trainer Josie Carroll. Really do appreciate you stopping by, Josie, and happy to have you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, nice to be here with you. And, you know, we were just talking about your resume, and you start looking at all the races you've won, and you start thinking about the two Queen's Plates. But we heard the clip of Edenwald winning in 2006 just a short time ago, and that was a very special day for you.
That was a really exciting moment, that first Queen's Plate. I mean, watching the Queen's Plate all my life and to actually jump up and win it, that was a pretty special day.
This is the way that you actually described it when you joined us on Trainer Talk a few months back, and I want to play this for you here because I think you'll enjoy it. This is the way you described that day in 2006.
When it was Edenwald, who was the first of my two, I mean, I'll never forget that day. It was surreal. You know, that's what you've dreamed of since you were young. I mean, the Queen's Plate's always been the aspiration, you know, of anybody in Canada. And that day was overwhelming. I mean, it was crossing the wire in front was great, but I'll tell you the moment that, you know, it still almost brings tears to my eyes. It sounds kind of corny. When the horse walked back in front of the crowd and the cheer went up and it was pure love of sport. There was nothing about, you know, gaming or gambling, or it was just pure love of the animal and the sport and the appreciation from the crowd. I think I'll never ever forget that moment. I think that was the sort of the purest moment I've ever had in the sport.
Josie, I have to tell you, I love the way you describe that, and just pure love of the sport. You know, there's the movie For Love of the Game, right? Well, I can only imagine what it had to be like here at Woodbine on that day when that happened.
Yeah, and truly that was the greatest moment.
That's got to be a good feeling the second time you do it, because people can't say, oh, well, you know, she just got a nice horse and blah, blah, blah. But you do it two times, that's pretty impressive.
It was pretty special. I'd like to do it three. This will be the, you know, should we win, it would be the first year with one they had bred. We purchased the first two.
How long does it take you to know if a horse has that factor, that it factor, as I call it?
I think that particular horse showed it to us the first time we started breezing. And, you know, they're babies and you tell them go head and head, and he always had to have his nose in front.
He's got an impeccable record. Did he have an excuse in the Wando?
I have no idea what happened there. You know, we had shipped up from Keeneland. I thought the horse was in good order, and he threw a bad race. Whether it was his first experience over this new track, it was a little loose that day, but I really don't like to make excuses. I have no idea. All I know is he came back, and he came back to form.
Josie Carroll with us here on the Equine Forum. Josie, if you don't mind, stay with us. We have to get to a real quick commercial break. We will come back. We'll continue this visit. Two-time Queen's Plate winning trainer, Josie Carroll, on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello?
Hello, boss? Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interest and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org. Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience. Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March Chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
This is David Jacobson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mike Pena, Jude Feld, and Jeff Bloom positioned on the apron here at Woodbine Racetrack in Ontario, Canada. Our very first visit to this northernmost racetrack, and boy, it has been an absolute delight over the past couple of days. Woodbine has rolled out the red carpet, and we are visiting with one of those individuals, Josie Carroll, who is tied into this race and tied into the history of this race as much as anybody. She's won it twice. When she won with Edenwald back in 2006, she became the first female trainer ever to saddle a winner of this historic race. And we were just talking about a couple of the contenders that she has in this year's field, and both of those figuring to be among the favorites with Amiz Gizmo and then, of course, with the filly Gamble's Ghost. And you told me, Josie, before the break that Amiz Gizmo is a horse that just loves to win. How about Gamble's Ghost? Tell me about her.
Entirely different style of racing. She's a deep closer, but she has such a turn of foot when she gets in gear. She's a very, very fast filly, and you can use it tactically with her.
You know, you've told me on several different occasions, and I noticed as we were in the commercial break, you were on the phone with one of your assistants or a person that works with you, and you've told me on several occasions that it's your staff that means so much to you and helps you have so much success. Tell me about the team that you have.
I mean, no question. You know, my assistant, Lori Ellen, she just takes care of all the details so that I can concentrate on what I do. I can concentrate on the horses and the training, and she'll be behind me making sure that everything else gets taken care of. We have grooms and hot walkers that have been with me almost 20 years, many of them. So we have a staff that knows their job. I don't have to worry about that, you know?
Josie, fillies have done extremely well in the Queen's Plate against the boys. When it's getting closer and closer to make a decision as to whether or not you'll run in the Queen's Plate with a filly, I mean, does it? What are the attributes of a filly that make you feel like I'm going to take a shot against the boys?
You know, both the fillies that I've run came out of the Oaks. Of course, Inglorious won the Oaks. It was an easier decision for her. She had a pretty uncomplicated trip when she won. I knew she was bouncing out of it well. This filly had a very troubled trip in the Oaks, got banged down, got a couple of little cuts on her, the outside of her legs from other horses banging her, and I was very, very hesitant about whether to run or not. Mr. Delos is the best. He said, if the horse isn't 100% and you're not happy, do whatever is right. So we set a lot of little parameters, and I said, you know, if she doesn't bounce out of that and the first day back training, not on the muscle and feeling good, we're not going. So she sort of passed that test. Coming up to a breeze, and I had asked Luis to go in a certain time with her. I said, if she doesn't hit her mark, no. So, of course, there she goes. Hits it, like, spot on. Couldn't have been better. Occasionally, after her work, she'll leave a little feed in her tub. I said to Mr. Delos, if she leaves any feed, we shouldn't go. We've got one good horse in there. I think she licked the bottom out of the tub that day. So, basically, she said, you know what? I want to go.
She emphatically answered for you as to whether or not she was running.
Yeah, usually it's not the trainer that's playing the devil's advocate. But you mentioned Mr. Delos is breeding better and better horses. And talk about that relationship with him and how that came around and his goals and aspirations and how you're helping him live out his dream.
Several years ago, he asked me to, he has horses with several trainers. He asked me to take a few horses several years ago, and we had some good success, and gradually he started funneling more and more of them my way. And because I do, you know, go to Kentucky spring and fall, which is where his horses are raised, he has started having me go out spring and fall and look at all the young horses and write him an analysis of everything that he can put in with what his farm people say. And from that, he makes some decisions on what direction he wants to go with breeding. And I have no input in that, but I tell him what I see. And then he figures that into his breeding program.
That's great. I love it when you come to Kentucky because you kind of fly under the radar. And you're always good for a couple double-digit winners during Keeneland. So you've always been one of my favorite trainers. And talk about that, the circuit that you enjoy. I mean, that's got to be pretty fun, going to Keeneland and coming here. I mean, back and forth, it's got to be great, huh?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have the kind of horses that can do that. We winter in Florida now. For many years, we wintered in New Orleans, but we've kind of moved over to Gulfstream for the winter, and then we usually hit Keeneland on the way up. And I don't hit Keeneland with a lot of horses. I really don't want to be away unless we're live. There's no point just going to be there. If we've got some live horses, we'll take them.
Josie Carroll with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Josie, when we come up to the Kentucky Derby in the States and the months leading up to it, we're talking about pedigree and we're talking about dosage, which used to be the hot topic, right? And can a horse get that mile and a quarter distance? Well, the Queen's Plate is also a mile and a quarter, just like the Derby. Are there certain attributes? I know Jeff asked you about fillies, but are there certain attributes that you look for when you're getting a horse and you're prepping them for a race like the Queen's Plate?
Do you know, the two horses that I won the Queen's Plate with both had great minds. They were both horses that handled pressure, handled stress. And I think you're going a mile and a quarter, that whole lead up, you're in the paddock, there's a lot of action, you're in there a long time. I think if they can keep their nerves together, I think you've got a much better chance.
Yeah, just like the Kentucky Derby, they do the walkover and the horses are being greeted by hundreds of thousands of people. It's the same thing when they get to the paddock, same thing here.
Exactly, and I'll tell you, actually, the funniest was Inglorious. She got over there, and a lot of the horses were getting very agitated and hot, and she kind of got tired of walking around, so she sort of snatched at the shank, put her head down, and started to graze.
That's a good sign.
Basically, she said, I've had enough of this. If I got to wait, I might as well enjoy myself.
Have a little pre-race snack.
And honest like to God, that's unusual. You just don't see a horse relax like that with all that around. And I said, wow.
Do you do anything differently as a trainer to try to get them ready and get them acclimated for that type of environment? Or is there anything you can do?
There's not a lot you can do. I mean, that's a that's a one-day kind of experience. Years ago, Woodbine used to put on a press junket, like a barbecue for the press to come over probably a week out, and we were invited to bring the horses over. And if I thought the horses could handle it, I always brought them over because they got exposed to all the people swarming around them and watching them. And that I thought that was really good when they did that.
That's one thing I've noticed here at Woodbine, guys. I don't know if you have noticed this too, but it still seems to be about the horse, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think all the different facilities, the different tracks that you have at your disposal to train, you can kind of, you know, tailor make a program for a horse. That's got to be a tremendous thing to enjoy.
I don't think you could go anywhere where we've got a mild tapeta, we have a mild dirt, we have a 7/8 training turf that we can use 3 days a week. We have a big field to sort of mellow horses out in that's got a track cut around it. And we have a sand ring for when you, say, come in the spring and they're a little hot and you want to get them a little tired on a little ring. I mean, I don't know anywhere that has that.
Well, in Canada, Canadian racing is so unique with their Triple Crown because you have two tracks, but you have three races that are on three completely different surfaces with tapeta, with traditional dirt at Fort Erie, and then you come back here and you have the mile-and-a-half turf test to wrap it all up. Makes it very unique too, doesn't it?
It takes an extraordinary horse to do that.
Yeah. Is it maybe more difficult now that we have three different surfaces than it used to be in the past?
I would have to say so, anytime you change it up like that.
Yeah, Roger Atfield, we asked him that question. He's won it three different times, of course, the Triple Crown. There's only been seven in the history of Canadian racing. He's done it three times, and he agreed. He thought that with the three surfaces now, it takes a very unique horse to be able to win the Triple Crown.
Absolutely.
So what's the preparation if you win the Queen's Plate? What do you do to get ready for the next one?
Hopefully get them rested up and get them to bounce back fast. They're certainly fit enough.
What's the spacing of the races with the Queen's?
It's
3 weeks between each of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes it challenging as well.
Very tight.
Yeah.
Josie Carroll here on HRRN. Josie, best of luck here tomorrow. Two horses set to go, Amiz Gizmo, and, of course, the brilliant filly who has been so, so good this year. That is, of course, Gamble's Ghost. Really appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to catching up with you tomorrow on the broadcast as well.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, she's the best, Josie Carroll, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ken Ramsey's going to join us here in just a little bit as well. He's going to stop by to talk about his Queen's Plate entrant, Sir Dudley Diggs, and that's a great story. The name of that horse is a great story. We're going to get Ken to tell us that story when he stops by. Josie Carroll, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It's the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. Such a delight, huh?
Yeah, she's great.
No question.
Yeah, so much fun.
And, you know, it's interesting when you get her away from the barn, you can tell that she isn't completely away from the barn. In the back of her mind, she's thinking about the filly that just went out the last set or the colt that's coming up to work in company. And, you know, that's the markings of a successful trainer, you know, constantly on top of orchestrating all those decisions that go into being, you know, making these horses successful and win races.
Yeah, and her eyes lit up when she said, "Oh, did you see my set go? Yeah. The three horses that worked. Oh, that's a full brother to the filly that's in the Queen's Plate." You know, well, and it's like that. I mean, that's got to be the best feeling ever. I mean, you're running in the Queen's Plate tomorrow, and you've got a 2-year-old that just outworked two other nice 2-year-olds, right? That's a full brother. It's got to be like, wow, I could do this 2 years in a row.
That's what I was just going to say, Jude, because here she is with two of, you know, arguably the top two contenders in the race, certainly two out of the three, and what she's talking about is these babies, you know, yeah, that are going to the track. And, you know, I was at her barn, and she had a set of colts that had gone out there. It was like the rodeo, but these were some good-looking colts, you know, big, strapping, strong, well-put-together horses. And that's the whole thing. It's what have you done for me lately? You know, you got to keep going after it.
What started out as a cooler morning with temperatures only in the mid-50s has warmed up beautifully now. The sun is out. There is hardly even a cloud in the sky. We're under those beautiful powder blue skies, and temperatures on their way to the low 80s today. Going to be much of the same tomorrow for Queen's Plate Day. Again, a monster day of racing tomorrow here at Woodbine. Our coverage 4 to 6 Eastern time, the 157th running of the Queen's Plate. You can hear it on Sirius 106 XM channel 201, and you can stream us worldwide, horseracingradio.net. You can even do it if you're at a wedding tomorrow, by the way, as we told Terry Finley, who couldn't be here.
I can see Terry looking like, Terry. Like a Secret Service guy standing in the back.
He'll, do it. He'll do it.
I don't know about Secret Service. Knowing Terry, it's the Queen's Plate. He's going to be front and center with that video being held up, whether
water.
It's middle of the ceremony or not.
Yeah. Well, Terry Finley could not make it up to Woodbine for the Queen's Plate, but another prominent owner in the sport of thoroughbred racing.
That's okay.
Needs very little introduction. You can hear him now. He is multiple Eclipse Award winning owner and breeder Ken Ramsey, who sends out Sir Dudley Diggs in Queen's Plate. He's with us now. Always a delight. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed being here.
Hey, all right. So we have visited now in Barbados. We visited in Canada. What's our next country? Where are we going next?
Well, we went about as far south as we can go and about as far north as we can go. So I guess we'll start the east-west circuit.
Yeah. When's your next Italian stakes winner?
Let's see. My trainer, I talked to him a couple of days ago over there in England. He's got four getting them all set. Hope to make it for the big race over there next year at Royal Ascot. So we got them. We're out and about.
Speaking of European racing, what about Bobby's Kitten? What's he up to?
Well, Bobby's Kitten, I got a little confidentiality statement playing with him. He ended up winning by 8.5 lengths his first time out over in England. In Ireland, and the track was about ankle deep and really, really heavy. So anyway, came out of that race okay, and then was training for the next one and suffered a hairline crack in his left hind leg. So he's still over there. I can't say any more about him. We're under some negotiations now. He may not be with me too much longer.
All right, well, but he gave you some good moments.
He gave me some good moments. I mean, we had a big schedule planned for him this year, and that was just devastating because we really thought we could get off the schneid, you know, what you might call it, at the Royal Ascot and win one, but it wasn't to be.
All right, so we've told listeners throughout this program this morning that Ken Ramsey was going to come on, and he was going to tell the incredible story of how Sir Dudley Diggs got his name. So go ahead.
Well, Sir Dudley Diggs, one of my illustrious ancestors. Matter of fact, he was a first cousin to the King Edward III. So they was debating the and he belonged to the House of Lords, so he was debating in the House of Lords the divine right of kings. And when it came his turn, he said he did not believe in the divine right of kings because he grew up with the king, and he knew for a fact that the king put his trousers on the same way he did, namely one leg at a time. So for that infuriated the people, and the House of Lords, and they threw him in the Tower of London. So didn't infuriate the House of Lords, but infuriated, the officials over there. So threw him in the Tower of London. The House of Lords revolted. This is all in the history books. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. This is too good a story to make up. So we're in the House of Lords, and they rebelled, kept him 3 days, and released him. So I go over to England a few years back, and I go up there, and I'm with the Tower of London. I heard one of my ancestors was imprisoned. Well, if he was, he'll be up in our big book we got upstairs. Go up there and see one of the beef eaters, and he'll get you lined out. So I go up, and the guy opens a book, and he says, "Yes, here's your ancestor, Sir Dudley Diggs. Here's the date and the time he was in." And I said, "Well, what was the offense?" And he read off something. I forgot exactly what it was. And I said, "What does that mean?" And he said something insulting to the king. And I said, "I know exactly what it was." And I quoted the trousers part. And he got all huffy and said, "Well, if your ancestor said that about the queen, he deserved to be in prison." So Sir Dudley Diggs, I have been to his tomb. He's interred along with his mother in an abbey over there in England. We went over and visited that. He became a very illustrious person. At one time, he and two partners owned the Bermuda Island, which back at that time was called the Flower Island, and they ceded it to the crown for protection because Spain and some of the other colonies, you know, were trying to take it away from them. So that's why Bermuda Day is an English crown colony, because my ancestor, Sir Dudley Diggs. He was also a mathematician. He wrote a couple books. Very, very illustrious ancestor.
you know, if he wins the race, Sir Dudley Digs the horse, if he wins the race tomorrow, they may let you start sitting in the Queen's box over here, Ken. You might have to be – that might be your seat for future Queen's
Well,
place.
I don't know if I've got one drop or one little centimeter of a drop of blood roll in me or not, but I do actually trace back to King Edward III. That's no joke. 60, I believe it's 63 or 64 generations.
Wow.
That is amazing.
That's
right?
A wild battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you be knighted?
You don't have to bow or anything. I mean, but
genuflect.
I read Sir Dudley Digg's, he was prominent in Virginia at
yes,
one time.
Yes.
And that when he passed away, he left like an annuity that provided for a 20-pound purse for some races in Virginia, but they weren't horse races. They were amongst the residents of the county that he was in, and he left this purse. So they used to have a race every year for like 200 years. They had this race, and the prize was 20 pounds.
Well, let me tell you something else about him. So we had several sons, and the one of the younger sons, when he passed away, his older brother got all the land over there, what they call the right of primogeniture. The eldest son gets the land, and that's the way it still is to some extent. And then the younger sons, they get stocks or bonds or cash or horses or whatever. So big English case law, the younger son, his name was Charles, and he brought suit in England claiming that he should have half the estate rather than his brother get it all. He lost the case. And so he ended up coming to America. That's where I could come in. He came to America and was either second or third colonial governor of Virginia. And Sir Dudley Digg's also is responsible for the Hudson River being named Hudson River. He had three ship captains, and one of them was Henry Hudson. And they had him over here. So Henry Hudson was exploring, and, of course, he found the Hudson River and named it after him. But anyway, Charles Digg's, then he ended up... the ship captain was a guy named Richardson Herndon, and I come down through the Herndons. Richardson Herndon was a ship captain, and Sir Dudley Digg's and was his ship captain, and Charles was his son. They knew each other. So Charles ended up marrying Richardson Herndon's daughter, and then they came on through Virginia.
Wow.
So.
Wow,
I mean, how you keep track of all that.
Yeah,
that is impressive.
Very impressive.
Ken, it's a bit of a family affair, is it not, with Sir Dudley Digg's? I believe your grandson was the one who traveled with this horse here to Woodbine, assisting Michael Maker. How special is that to have your family involved with caring
for
this horse?
Well, I've got two grandsons. William Kenneth is sitting right over here behind us listening to the program.
Of William's Kitten fame?
William's Kitten, right. By the way, William's Kitten is famous because he's now standing at stud in Ohio. Couldn't make it to Kentucky, but in Ohio. Yeah, I have my oldest grandson is named Nolan Grant, son of my youngest son, Kelly. And he... Well, I don't know if you say this. Well, I'll just go ahead and say it.
Why not?
Well,
wait, you not say it?
It's never stopped him before.
I'll just say it. He graduated from the Lexington School, was on the honor roll over there, and then went down to the school down in Asheville, North Carolina, the Asheville School, a very hard school to get in, and was on the honor roll down there for a while. So then he decided he wanted to go. He'd been working with horses all of his life. I've got pictures of me, you know, him in my arms, you know, carrying him in a winter circle. So he really got hooked on the horses badly. So he'd been working with Mike Maker, and he decided he wanted to go to the University of Louisville to take their equine management program and a business degree at the same time. So he enrolled up there, and I thought he was going to go part-time working with Mike Maker in full-time school. Anyway, he ended up working about 45 hours a week, driving back and forth over to Turfway Park in wintertime. So anyway, he told me, he said actually he knew more about horses than the instructor did, and he probably did because he'd been involved in all of it. So anyway, he is elected to drop out this year. He called in the gap year. I hope it don't become a gap decade or a gap lifetime. But he's hooked on the horses, and he's already got his assistant trainer's license. So he brought the three horses up that we're running up here, and he's been up here, him and an exercise gal, for the last 10 days to train them. As a matter of fact, he called me this morning and said I need to be over here, that Sir Dudley is going to be galloping on the track at 8 o'clock. Of course, I didn't show up at 8 o'clock.
We didn't get in until later last night, so that's understandable. Ken Ramsey with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ken, stay with us. We have a one-minute commercial for Gainesway to get to, and then we're going to come back. And Ken Ramsey's going to help us wrap up the show today. What the heck? We'll take you right to the end of the program next here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Power.
But Tapazar is just playing too good today. And it's going to be Tapazar and Garrett Gomez coming home with his ears pricked to win the Sham Stakes.
Passion.
And a big performance from Tapazar and Corey Nakatani as they romp in the San Fernando.
Performance.
Tapazar's going to keep Royal Trip at bay. And Tapazar, a sterling performance today.
Gainsway stallion Tapazar is a grade one winning miler by leading sire Tappet from the family of champion Untappable. And is Tappet's only grade one winning miler at stud. Tapazar retired sound with more than $972,000 in earnings following a career in which he broke his maiden by 10.5 lengths at Churchill Downs at 2, went wire to wire to win the Grade 3 Sham Stakes at 3, and was a runaway winner of the Grade 2 San Fernando and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
And, of course, Tapazar, now the sire of four individual first crop two-year-old winners, so off to a great start at stud at Gainsway. We're back visiting with owner Ken Ramsey, a multiple Eclipse Award winner. He knows how to win the big races. He's going to try and win his first Queen's Plate tomorrow. Ken, you had an opportunity a few years back to win the Queen's Plate. Things looked like they were going to fall into place, and it kind of lost all chance at the break that day.
Well, we're going to see the horse that ran in it two or three years ago. We miss Artie. Named after my wife's cousin, whose husband passed away. Everybody loved Artie, so anyway, the horse is by Artie Schiller, so we named him We Miss Artie. Went off 8-5 favorite. Todd Pletcher was training him for him. Thought we had a big chance of winning. However, when they opened the gate, he stood up and waved to the crowd. Reared up on his hind legs and just stood there, it seemed like forever. Finally came back down and ran a closing fourth. Lexi Lou beat us. With Patrick Husbands riding, yep. And I see I'm riding against Patrick Husbands again tomorrow.
Your Barbados jockey.
Yeah, my Barbados jockey. I love Patrick Husbands. So anyway, we got Julian back on our horse tomorrow, and we feel like we got a pretty good shot. Speaking of Tappet, I got to throw this little sidebar in. We ran third last night in the Iowa Derby out at Prairie Meadows with a horse called Hen of Roses. You know where I got that name from. But he ran third in the Grade 3 Iowa Derby, and he's by Tappet. So being by Tappet, and he's out of a half-sister to Kitten's Joy, so the pedigree is just sterling. So he probably, by running third in the Grade 3 last night, at least can stand in Ohio for $5,000 next year, even if he doesn't do anything else.
Well, there you have it. Ken Ramsey, boy, he is winning races all over the world, and he's going to try and win a big one here tomorrow in the Queen's Plate. Ken, we have about 45, 50 seconds left to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum. We're just going to remind our listeners they can go back, check out the podcast if they missed any portion of the show, our interview with Terry Finley, with Roger Atfield, with Josie Carroll, with Sandy Hawley, or with Ken Ramsey. We're back tomorrow, 4 to 6 Eastern Time, Sirius 106, XM 201, and worldwide at horseracingradio.net. I'm going to let you take it home, Ken. We have about 20 seconds left. What do you want HRN Nation to hear about Ken Ramsey and Sir Dudley Diggs?
Well, we ran in the prep race, and I thought we ran well. We got the jockey back up that rode him for his other win. Looks like the race sets up fairly well for us. I actually own the mare of Roger Atfield, who used to train for me, so if that one wins, we're good, but I'm happy either way it goes.
Good night, Barbados.